obviously I'm here today to talk about Market Garden.
Yeah, right.
And the operation there. Yeah. So if I start off, what is your name?
Anthony Brady, retired major, full-time in the army, 35 years. Started life as a guardsman in the Serb Battalion, the Irish Guards, in the Guards Army Division. Then I was commissioned from the field into the Royal Irish Fusiliers. I stayed there for the rest of my service.
Oh, right. Can you describe your role during the operation?
Well, my role in the Serb Battalion was in the sniper section. Although it started with companies, Fortra Company, was then pooled under the IO in RHQ and sent out to companies as required. In Operation Market Garden, some of them stayed with companies, the others, such as myself, went with a sergeant sniper, and we were just behind RHQ. We were travelling from the start line in a 1500 weight with the sergeant, and we followed it through with TAC HQ till we got to Valkensbaden.
Right.
That's really. We didn't do anything because it was all happening up front on the narrow
front. So you were much further down the convoy.
Well, there were two squadrons, Sabre Squadron, Squadron Carrying Number 1 Company, TAC HQ, then there was us and Oddbods, O groups and that sort of thing, and then there was the Rifle Company again, 3rd Rifle Company, because there were only 3, following up in TCVs, but there was another squadron coming up as well.
Can you recall when you were briefed about the operation?
Well, we were briefed. In fact, I reckon we got very little briefing. I know the companies were briefed. And we were briefed. It was on a Sunday morning when we were briefed at all by the drill sergeant who was looking after us, amongst other things, very briefly, and just tell us there was this huge operation coming off and that we were all going to reach for the Zyder Zee and be home for Christmas. I mean, we didn't get any more than that.
Right, but you were told you'd be home for Christmas.
No, that was a great line. And if there were any troops, of course, they were these white bread battalions.
Had you operated with airborne forces previously? Had you ever...
No, we'd been through them after we landed on the beaches and right. Went through.
So by the time you arrived at Normandy, they were actually...
Oh, they were holding the left flank, first 6 airborne. I remember going through them over the Pegasus Bridge as we went up to do Op Market Garden and thinking, by God, I'm glad I'm not in that lot dug into the ground with not much support. No, there was no combined training. Right, I didn't know if there was anywhere else, I doubt it.
So, obviously, you'd had this briefing on the Sunday morning, which wasn't particularly fulsome.
No, and we went to Mass in the church, I always remember that. And then we assembled in the yard of a huge factory, which you'll see down there.
Yes. Was that to the south of the bridge, or was that to the...
It's south of the bridge, and to the, if you were facing the bridge, to the right. All the vehicles... Follow-up vehicles and quotes and knows what were there, and we sat there for a long while till we suddenly saw this strange sky covered in aeroplanes. And remember the thing we discussed? Somebody said, I hope to God we get through this without being wounded or killed or something like that. And one man, Corporal Hall, said, I'd hate to be wounded by a potato masher or a grenade. Mm-hmm. My God, that was the very thing that hit him that night in the village. And thought, well, you know.
And this, you saw Turopat forming up. Did you see a convoy? I mean, obviously you were in the convoy.
Well, it was like a car park, and we were whisked out to get over that bridge. I mean, there was any... There were 2 bridges. I think there was by that time they built a Bailey Bridge.
Bailey across as well.
And we moved up. We didn't get very far. We probably got further than anybody because we were the RHQ. We got a couple of miles up the road. What happened? The rest just sat there, I imagine, until we cleared all that nonsense that was going on. Right. I mean, we hadn't been gone 5 minutes when the bloody flames going up in the front.
Right.
There was a member of a vehicle on fire.
And was that from 88s, or was that from
No, it wasn't from the air. It was from either an 88s in the woods, I can show you on the map, and or bazookas.
Right.
And the thing came to a halt, because the tanks couldn't get off the road.
Right.
And then we seemed to be there forever, because I remember we made it, Sergeant Keating made pots of tea back in the 1500s. The only time I saw a war correspondent, a fellow who wrote Chester Wilmot, came up with a Dizzy Blonde and a Jeep took one look at it and bugged off. Remember that?
Really? So Chester Wilmot. But he was travelling by ground, though, he wasn't.
He was on. Yeah, but there was a fellow in the Daily Mail who had to be dragged off the leading tank report. He was brilliant.
Right.
Got all the details, and he following these typhoons coming, which came in. There was a taxi rank of them. They came in fairly soon after the halt, and they were firing the things from behind us, going down the road like express trains. It was claimed, and I think Joe says he thought in his memoirs that perhaps one of our tanks was hit by it. I'm sure they weren't, because right. Tinker Taylor, who was a great friend and recently died, he said he's absolutely certain they weren't. They were firing into the Germans, and of course they turned the whole thing.
And so that was able to...
That cleared the road, and then we had the problem of getting up, clearing the tanks off the road, because it's very narrow.
And so, because we'll talk about this, yeah. this road too narrow that you yeah. talked about. So, I mean, I've driven that stretch, and well, it's supposed to be quite authentic, but ditches as well?
Yeah, there was a lot of ditches, and then the fields themselves were...
Quite marshy, or...
I wouldn't have said so, but not ideal. No, the main thing were ditches,
right.
where it all happened, and then the woods stretched away, so if you'd gone off the road into the field, as they did, I think, for one stage, to get back on the road to make any progress.
Right.
And these buggers were in the woods. The truth of the matter is we hadn't cleared the start line.
Right, okay. So that's the
simple
problem.
As that. I mean, they all assumed we'd have a good jolly all the way up to Arnhem, if you like.
And you think, was that a sort of common view, that it would be a quite simple...
Oh, I think so, yes. And you see, the other thing is, as usual, we have a lot of Montes barrages. They came, everything in Kingdom Come came down on those woods. But the Germans had got the measure of that. They knew, and they'd move out. They also had a lot of bazookas, as they call them, dug into those ditches, and that played merry hell with the leading tanks.
So I've seen a fire plan for the yeah. start, a very complicated fire yeah. plan, but it seems quite narrow on the road.
It is narrow on the road, and of course the 88s, I couldn't tell you how many there were, but I've got the German plans and who was where. And although they were hodgepodge, they were backed up by an SS crown
right.
who said, you know, you don't go backwards, you stay there.
You stay where you are and you fight.
But I do remember very soon after that we got hold, the next thing was, they were running down the road, prisoners, and the ground sheets looking like bats. And they gave themselves up then. We moved on then to, eventually, to Valkenswaard.
So, when did you get to Valkenswaard?
Got there that evening. And
right.
when we got there, pulled in, and that bloke who said he didn't want to be wounded came up in this HQ TCV, halted, and at that moment, the Germans got through Valkenswaard behind a fire engine. And they were throwing potato mashers into vehicles, and they threw it into this vehicle and wounded this poor bugger.
Right. So he prophesied what would happen
yeah,
to him.
Yeah, almost extraordinary, right?
And what was the people's reaction like when you arrived there? Was it...
Oh, well, in the evening, in the main square, they were all over the place. But I tell you an amusing thing. When we were forming up to go across the start line, HR, whatever it was, a very good friend of mine, he's still alive, Wilson, he said he was sitting on the leading tank, and all the Dutchmen were coming back from Mars on bicycles and waving, and they told me, you know, just oblivious.
This was before the airborne troops had
yeah.
landed, so...
And he says they were all waving on those baloney bicycle tracks, which I nearly got killed on so many times.
Sit up and beg bikes.
Yeah, and they all went back. The first night, well, I've got to confess, we, as the sniper section, were isolated from anyone else. There was a door open and a light on, and we went into the house. And there was a meal on the table, just like that, including a roast chicken. And went down the cellar. There was a reinforced cellar, nobody there, double bed, a maid. We can't get in there. Anyhow, we were mulling around, making a cup of tea on the pavement, and somebody said, well, you have to mount a guard on the vehicle and all night, so keep down somewhere. Well, in the end, we ate the chicken, and we all went downstairs, and the first time I'd seen, any of us had seen a bed since June. So we lay on the bed. Well, the funniest thing of all was there was one man called Lightfoot. huge man who'd been a gardener somewhere in New Brighton. And he couldn't, he was a guard, we used to call him, couldn't resist collecting things, like bootlaces, anything he could lay his bloody hands on. When we got in the vehicle the next morning, the Dutchman ran up to the vehicle there we were in, and he said, "Look, chaps, don't mind you eating our supper. We don't mind you sleeping in our bed, but can I have my bloody alarm clock back?" And we all looked at Lightfoot, and he produced an alarm clock. Could you imagine it?
So you stayed there for the
stayed
night.
Stayed there for the night. Next day there was chaos, and there's a photograph of it in most magazines or books on Balkansville. There were the Grenadiers, the mix, every bucket. I mean, if they dropped one bomb, they could have got rid of the division. They were storing prisoners under the bandstand. My friend was put in the hospital. I think it was a convent or something. And we milled around there until eventually the Grenadiers left off, took off, and we followed up to Eindhoven.
Right.
The outskirts of Eindhoven, from my point of view, the RHQ with Vandeleur set up his HQ in Phillips.
In the factory?
No, in the house, private house.
Oh, right.
Lovely private house. And we dug in the lawn somewhere. And the companies went off trying to secure those bridges. Now, we didn't take any part in that, but
right.
Eventually the bridges were secured. We then went on the advance.
Right.
And I think it was then that the Americans, I hadn't seen any Americans.
I was going to say, when did you first see...
I saw the Americans the first time crossing the Wilhelm Canal, one of these funny canals,
yes.
Which they'd mended. I do recall when sitting, smoking in a slip trench on the lawn, Herr Phillips, the son, came out and gave us, John and I, a lecture on how we misunderstood the Japs, and really they were jolly good chaps. And God, you know.
And so you were there, but...
We were there all night, I think.
Right. So was that the night Eindhoven was bombed, or was that the...
No, we weren't bombed there.
Right, so you were okay, because that...
We were all right.
You stayed there, the fighting went on to the north, where the companies linked up with the Americans.
Yeah.
And then you pushed on, or...?
What we did was... on out of Balkansorg, it was a clear run, you see, but it was after Eindhoven that these bloody little canals were.
Right.
And we were held up quite a while they took those things.
Because they had to fix a bridge,
didn't they?
Yeah,
they did. They fixed a Bailey Bridge, took bloody days.
And did you see the bridging
coming? Went over it, I didn't, because we were at a flank, as it were. And it struck me at the time, the whole of that operation. There were so many rivers to cross, you'd think you'd had assault boats and bridging right up forward.
So where was it then on the convoy?
Well, it was on the narrow road trying to get up. I mean, it must have had a job, because there was at least another div coming up, TT div.
Yep.
And Christ knows how many tanks all on that one road.
Right.
Looking back, and something I learned in exercises in Germany is if you're going to cross rivers, have a life belt or two up front.
Yes,
silly.
Yes.
If you read the TAC or OPS orders of the other div, and one, I think it was the 4th, 7th or some officer asked at the O group, and it's written down, what happens when we get to Nijmegen, the bridge is blown? And some star flake very wisely said, well, lots of barges on the Rhine. I mean, you know.
That was the plan.
I mean, it was a... I cuffed it, but I mean,
right,
if the bridge had been blown at Nijmegen, that would have been it.
That would have been it.
Full stop.
That question was asked last week.
No way. It took a while to build that second Bailey Bridge.
We're very keen to question on the idea of what Horrocks actually thought. You know, with this plan, did he really think he'd make it to Nijmegen and find the bridge there?
Anybody did. By that stage, you've got to remember, we'd have been a cock-up at Goodwood. We wiped the battalion out in Normandy. It'd been on the bloody go from June till August. Got a break in Brussels. Got down to the first load of canals after Louvain and got hell knocked out of us there. And then when we started in the Market Garden, by the time we got to Nijmegen, well, you can see on the casualty list. I personally think, in retrospect, it would have been better, instead of using the aeroplanes for troops, they would have flown supplies up to the airfields.
Yes.
I don't know, I'm not. But I know at the time, we all face cynical. I mean, they're not like soldiers today. They were national service, and people like myself who, you know, say, well, all I remember saying, think, I do remember this, saying to myself, well, Christ, how am I survive this? And then I said, well, if I do, I've only got to go into another bloody nonsense.
One battle after another.
Yeah, you know. And the novelty's worn off long since. I was much more interested in cups of tea and a good night's kip. I mean, Normandy, I did not know when we were there how the bloody hell we were going to get out. And as Browning said, is it Browning up? When a regiment or an army gets its head down, it's bloody difficult to get it up.
And I mean, you've seen, obviously, around you so many people who've been
casualties. Oh, well, they're Italian. And then you go on, and then you think, well, just, you know, live from day to day, as long as you get fed and whatnot. We left Nijmegen, and we slowly made progress, by which time it must have been 4 or 3 days, at least.
So you drove up the road, and in the end, you sort of reached Grave, and that
we got to Grave. I remember getting to Grave well, because we stopped. You know the bridge at Grave?
I do, yes.
There's a bunker or
a pillbox on
the left. We stopped opposite, and the first Yanks I saw were there.
Right.
And they were very friendly. They'd been in North Africa with the, I think, with the 1st Battalion.
Yes,
and they
yes. Said 82nd Airborne.
Yeah, and they said, well, you're mixed, we know you. I was wondered how the hell they defended themselves with these weird little rifles. I thought, I'd like a gun that fires a bit further. And we hadn't been there for long. I was, got out of the truck, and we was talking, and a Jeep appeared, I remember them. Rather, and there was a bloke driving it, a general. And he stopped. He said, where's your CO? I don't have a bloody clue where he was. But and he said, where would he be? And I said, well, I didn't know. I said, well, he's up front. We hope. And he had a Barathea battle dress,
right.
A gold chain here, and it was obvious who it was. It was Browning. And he looked as if he was poncing down Bond Street. And he was rather angry because we didn't know where the anybody was. So he turned about and buzzed off in his Jeep. And there were Americans saying, in the name of God's there, you know, sort of whatever. What's he doing? He's lost his way from London or something. But of course he got our whole headquarters south of the bridge, and I think the Coldstream of people were diverted to guard it.
So they went over to guard it, yes.
Yeah.
Of course, yes.
Yeah, sometime or other. Well, anyhow, we got to the Grave Bridge, got across the Grave Bridge safely, and then we stopped in a funny little village, Molka, some village which was on the map. We were there for bloody hours. Well, they got made up their minds. A, they had to clear the roundabout or the bridge area, and our lot were sorting out how they were going to get across the pond.
So you were waiting?
We were waiting, in fact, outside the house. I remember the woman saying, do come in, but take your boots off. And I thought, sod that, you know, if you suddenly get a call. The only other thing, I must admit, I was a bit immature. On the way up to Grau, and see it to this day, there's a school, or a school, there's a playground with swings. And we were stuck there for so long, I got pissed off. And I went over and got on the swing. I was raising up and down, and then I could hear them say, start up! I remember that sergeant
saying,
get over here, you bloody fool! And I whizzed off the swing.
Oh, that's this.
Got in the thing and went on. But you know, something like that. Any other thing about the Dutch were, anything came in the way of a counterattack or shelling, they bloody well got in your slip trench.
Really?
Well, at least they made it so awkward that you put them in and you got out.
Right.
No, we stuck outside Nijmegen.
So this was sort of the afternoon, wasn't it? There was a battle going on in the park there.
It was a raging battle. We were sorting out the bridge, the 2nd Battalion, and no infantry, but the 2nd Battalion, who were using all the ammo, firing the Yanks across. They then had to bring these stupid little canvas boats up.
Right. And did you see them go past the
No, they right? went up, if you look at the map,
they
went up a different
the west
left flank and round. No, it didn't. But they must have been miles behind.
Right.
And then eventually, one evening, I'll have to look at the diary, we started to move into Nijmegen, which was really a bit weird. It was sort of buildings on fire.
Right.
the odd sniper, all the furniture and the touch and put in the pavements, and we moved slowly through there to just quite near the big roundabout. We were diverted to the post office or telegraph centre.
To the right, a
huge building. And having got there, hadn't been there long, when I was called over by the agent or somebody, and he said, "Brady, you've got to go in the ambulance. It's got an SS man, and the orderly's Jewish, and he's frightened." So I got in with this crowd. It was full of wounded. And it went off, and I realized now, it went off towards the south, to where the divisional...
Towards the heights, maybe? Towards the Groesbeek area?
Where the headquarters was.
Right, yes, so back down towards...
Down towards the Dutch border. And it wasn't very far, but I remember driving down there with a bloke who looked absolutely dead, and the SS bloke, and bundled them out. And it was the forward dressing station or something like that.
Right.
Dropped them, came back. Then I was told to go up on the first floor and guard prisoners.
This was still in the post office.
Yeah, and we stayed in the post office, remember, until the man who guarded the bridge, a captain in the SS, was brought in, swaggered in, and he sat in the schoolroom with us outside, two of us, and a couple of Luftwaffe personnel who had the audacity to ask him for a light for their cigarette. But he was a nasty piece of work, and he was commanding that bridge. Well, in the end, I took him down to Joe Bandelier, and, you know, he went down to the I.O., and he was given a grilling, I suppose. And then he asked Joe for a car to go to the prisoner of war cage.
Was this before the bridge had been crossed, or...?
Now the bridge had been crossed, and we were waiting to go.
Right.
It was the morning.
It's the morning after. After,
yeah.
Cross, right.
Because we didn't go across at 2 o'clock that afternoon.
Right.
It was that morning, and Joe kicked his ass down the stairs, and he disappeared.
Right.
But then, you see, we then all assembled again to cross the bridge.
Had you suffered many casualties as a group traveling?
We hadn't. Not really, no, because the grenadiers were taking the...
They were keeping
our shirt till we got across the bloody bridge. So about 2 o'clock, got in this vehicle, 1500 again, and tooled down behind a squadron, crossed the bridge, and I remember, have you seen photos of bodies hanging the bridge, and there was a bloke with a...
Was there anybody else on it? Were people clearing it, or was it... And was there a lot of fire coming in on the bridge still? Nothing, so it was very quiet on the bridge.
Got to the far end, and we just motored off the end, and you go down and under the railway, and then we started this abortive effort to get to Elst.
So you were down in the sort of the little village of Lent, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, around there.
And there was the church, wasn't there, as well, in Lent, and there was...
Yeah, but then we went further than that, down that, the old road.
So the road that goes down toward Elst.
Yeah, that road.
Sort of, okay.
And we hadn't got far down there, and RHQ was in a cottage, remember that. And I was then sent to the field in front of the cottage, two of us, and there was one company in front of us, and a company on the right of the road. But this was after the tanks had been brewed up, and they were being attacked. And the next thing was, Joe set up his headquarters in a cottage, and the cottage caught fire. So they were yelling, "Come on, Brady, come on, Cronin, come and help take the furniture out." And I always remember this is awful, really. In every Dutch house, there's a big picture of the Sacred Heart. And being a Roman Catholic, I thought, well, I'm going to get a brownie point here. I seized it and ran out into the yard. And as I did this, somebody said, "Look down the field, they're coming down the field." I remember saying, "Sorry, mate," seized my rifle. And then we got down the end of the field, and there was an SS man gave himself up, a huge youth. And he got into my slit trench with me. He was crying. And I told him to stop blubbing and gave him some chocolates and sweets. I said, "Oh, what are you crying about? You're going home to England, not like us. Go and meet all the rest of your family up the road in a minute."
Absolutely. So, a And so that was an SS.
SS, there was
just an SS soldier. Well,
there were, SS. Right. They belonged to the 9th and 10th.
9th and 10th, who were dug in and around it.
And on the right, where I showed you those guns were, well, we were there for at least a day and a night.
Right.
And very thin on the ground.
Really? So what kind of armour did you have with you?
We had a bit of armour up at the back, but that was stuck getting up the road.
Right.
And they had a no group, I knew that, and they decided that it was a waste of time trying to go on.
Right.
And, I mean, there we were until the other division went round and took over.
Yes.
And we were pulled back for a rest in that big area where the nice sloshes.
Right, okay.
The Welsh Guards got through and took Ilst and were there for several days, very peacefully, shooting. And if you read in their memoirs, it was nothing happening. They were actually shooting snipe or something.
Really?
Then they were pulled out and we were told to go and take over from them. Christ, we only there 5 minutes and they must have looked us up. Said, oh, this is that crazy crowd. And it all started, and crying out loud, for 4 days we got hammered on there.
So the Germans put in a counterattack again?
They put in 2 days, one of which I can claim I spotted, because in that time of the year, and in Holland, you get fog.
Oh, yes.
So I was sent out one morning to the right-hand forward company, which I think was four, and got out there. What do you want me to do? The company commander was much more busy when he was going to have a breakfast. I think it wasn't actually. I went up there, I was feeling absolutely rotten, with cold, and got settled down, just about to light up, and I heard voices in the mist, in the forest. I said to the bloke with me, John, this is odd, what the hell is this? He said, listen, and you could hear them shouting, and they were Germans. So I said, oh, I think the queer fellow's on the move down. So we rushed back and warned them. And as it happened, they missed the company and went right past into a farm behind, which you can see on the map, and it's there today.
And was that because of the fog they couldn't see?
And it was led by a warrant officer. And the other interesting thing is they fired 2-inch mortar at it. And that, the blokes came over. And I remember getting a nice pair of binoculars from the warrant officer, which was taken from me by the truth, wasn't it? However, that was the first day there, and it seemed to go quite well. And the people on the other company up the road were getting all hell. They were further forward.
Right.
And they were getting hell locked out of them. And the first day. And the next day we went out to the same place. There was another attack. And it was very heavy. And I remember trying to get someone to get into the slip trench just after we arrived. And the young officer said, you can't use our slip trench. You're not in our company. I said, oh, sod you. And I went off down the road. And then they overran the company. I went back with John to our HQ. And on the way back, I found some gunners, anti-tank gunners, in the middle of a field. And they said, what are you doing? You're running away. I said, no, I'm running away. I tell you, at any moment now, you're going to be run over by the Germans are coming down. Went to RHQ, and I stayed there. The other company got virtually nearly overrun, and the tank got right up. And if you read in the war diary, Harvey Kelly, who's still alive, fired a pear test and missed, and fired another one.
Right.
And my great friend said, oh, for God's sake, hit it this time, which he did. They looked up and then drove back. But there was a big dike, you see, which stopped them getting across. The anti-tank gunners up there had buggered off. And our blokes were trying to fire it because they had no clue what they were doing with the 17-pounder.
They just left the gun.
Left the gun.
Right.
And it was a funny old setup. We got reinforcements shortly after that. And we then had a company that was fourth company, which took over from the Green Howards, I think, on the right flank. And they had a queer little setup in the Green Howards. Now, we were nearly overrun. The RHQ, which was in a jam factory up in Mills, got burnt down. We got another company of Welsh Guards came up to help us. And what they were trying to do was get back to the bridge, but we did stop them.
So that was their plan?
That was their plan, and my God, we stopped them. it was lucky because they were on foot. They did bring tanks over. You see, what they had was they had a ferry further down upstream, well, would be upstream,
yes.
And they were ferrying tanks and things over. And it was all quiet until they got that over because they couldn't get it across Frost Bridge, for want of a better word.
Right.
And they were getting across the, because that is really quite like an island.
So they're flanking in, aren't they? Which I suppose that leads on nicely to Arnhem.
It was Arnhem. Our people, and in one of the reports I was reading the other day, a friend of mine says they went as up to the far as Arnhem, the river, but not the bridge, and they brought some blokes back with photographs of them.
Did you see any of these? Were they evacuated?
No, I didn't actually. They must have gone through while I was doing something else. I do remember two things else, apart from the getting out in the morning was tricky. Because at night, people laying lines, it was all done on telephones. Well, this has never bloody worked, except in the gunners or tanks. The poor old lines were used to be clobbered by patrols. But once we were twice there, drill sergeant had to go and get ammo, and he got the wrong turn. He went into us, turned right instead of left. I remember going down the road, people shouting, "Stop, stop!" We were heading up to the bridge. The other thing, because they could not read maps. He was lucky to have a map. The other time, the final time we were pulling out, we had two prisoners in the back of the truck I was in, and again he took the wrong turn, this time south. And we stopped and he shouted, "Get out of the truck, I'll return it, and I'll come back." So we all got out, the prisoners, two men and myself in the apartment, the other sniper. And then he turned around, and when we got, John and I rushed to get in the truck, and the Joe voice was shouting, "Wait for us, trust the prisoners." So I said, "Get in." I always remember this to my dying shame. He got in, I handed my rifle. You know, by this time, they just wanted to give up. So we come back, and then we were taken for a rest. We crossed back to the area of the escarpment.
The hill.
Hill.
So you crossed over the bridge.
We crossed over the Bailey Bridge.
Right over the Bailey, because you said about the Bailey.
Oh, the Bailey Bridge, that's where Fitzgerald got arrested, so he's dead now. Oh, Dennis Fitzgerald, he's remember, sir. You said it was just the lights and bangs, it reminded me of the 4th of June, Eton. I thought, bugger there. I said, get across. One thing I hated was being in a truck. And the truck we travelled in was always ammunition in it.
Of course.
Oh, on this Bailey Bridge, and it was then, of course, they were using frogmen.
Right, so you knew about the frogmen.
Oh, we didn't kill monkeys.
Because had the, you know, because the railway bridge,
no, that
they
is
destroyed
gone.
That, didn't they? That's so that
they
is gone.
They would take the railway bridge until there were troops going back on it, German troops, to the last moment.
Right.
And they were in fact had whole horses and carts going over it to the last moment. And one of our tanks blew, claimed he aimed at the cart rather than save the horse. I'm flounding on that. Anyhow, we went then to rest and. There's a road that leads from Nijmegen down to Clave and those places, or Klokok.
Yes.
And we were in a field there near a school. An RHQ was in the school, which got shelled and wounded some of our prisoners in there. But for the most part, we were there, and it was all right, except they had drill parades every bloody day.
So even though you were resting, you were still drilling?
Oh, God, drill. And there was one bloke who'd been rewarded at Joe's Bridge. He was in my company originally, and he and three others were grabbed by Sergeant Major Osborne and told to go and guard the people taking the explosives out of Joe's Bridge, and he did. They all got AMMs. Two of them disappeared, deserted the following week, and this fellow, who was a minor of my business, he stayed on for a war and was put in the snipers. So when we came to rest in Nijmegen, he said, "Oh, I want to go back every night to see my mates on the bridge." And he said to the drill son, "All right, we'll be back in the morning." And I said, "What the bloody hell do you want to go down there? They're shedding a damn thing every night." He said, ah, but there's Bargee's brothel down there, and it's wonderful fun. I said, bloody hell. Trimble.
Right.
And he went back every night. My God, I can't believe it. So that was it. We were there, Nijmegen. Then we were moved further south. Well, they were making up their mind. And we were guarding the bridge, I think. It didn't involve us at all. In fact, I got a trip twice to Brussels to collect things with the drill sergeant, because I could speak a bit of French. And one of the things that happened the day I was away, a jet, the first German jet, was crashed into the field nearby.
Was it a 262?
Of course, by the time they got there, the RAF, there was nothing left. It was like a sort of herringbone. Everybody dead.
Picked all the bits off it.
Bloody angry.
Gosh.
So we were there until we moved down.
Right, so you then moved sort of first.
To the American,
Even at your position,
because
I think you said to me last time you were the baby, you were the young
boy. Well, I was 21 when we crossed into the Seine. I was 21st birthday. I was very young.
Right. I mean, did you sort of think this was a good plan or a bad plan?
They were very different. I probably thought more than most, because all my life at Stenhouse and school I'd been interested in military history. So I was quite excited about what was going on. And luckily, being with the drill sergeant, who always went to air groups, he would come back and both of them would tell you what was happening. So I had a fair. I don't think other people cared about monkeys.
No.
They really didn't. They're not like the troops today who one can be proud of. I mean, they were national servicemen who got half the pay that we got. I was on regular pay because I joined as a regular to get an extra few bob. But, no, they didn't really. And, you know, they'd heard it all before, in as much as we'd been terrible, this, that, and the other, but it never worked out quite as it was expected to be.
I mean, did you think that you could get to Arnhem? I take it you knew that that was...
Yes, no, I didn't. I honestly... I mean, I didn't think it was likely. Because they had a far healthier respect for the Germans. The Germans are bloody good soldiers. I mean, they only needed one 88 or two on a road, a narrow road, and you were snookered. I don't think we really believed it, no, to be honest.
You've said to me in the past about the road. Was that the big problem? Was it the fact that the road was too narrow?
And there was too much going up it. It was like, as I said, if you've got two funnels and put them into ends, much as you pour it in, you couldn't get it out the other end. It's like impossible. And I'm amazed that they did it the way they did. But it was all done, I think, in the last moment.
Yes, the planning was done very quickly.
If you'd looked at it, we were in a bridgehead over Joe's Bridge for at least a week.
Yes.
And those woods, they were attacked us quite badly from those woods, and then we were relieved by another regiment, and we went to rest while they were preparing us to go up the road. They were aware that those woods held troops. I'm surprised they didn't send out recce patrols, or even clear the woods before we got... It's the only thing, we didn't clear the start line. But you know, when I remember being commissioned, and the thing they taught you at the OCTU was never make the plan fit the appreciation. And that's what they did. They were going to cross and go and do it, and then they wrote the appreciation to... Even to the extent when they would tell they were Tiger tanks by that airborne player who's still alive.
Oh, yes, he lives in New York.
Yeah. They didn't want to believe it.
Right. And was this, do you think, because they wanted to use the airborne forces?
They wanted to use the airborne forces and Frost and co. You see, the Germans never used them after Crete. If they'd used them as an infantry regiment and give them some experience, they were less experienced than the greenest of the troops going forward.
So this was the first British Airborne?
Yeah. Very green.
Right.
I mean, you can see from what happened at the event. They dropped miles away, dropped... I mean, as for the wireless sense, it's unbelievable.
Right. What? I mean, you said about the transport aircraft. Would it have been better, do you think, to use those
aircraft? Well, I mean, I'm not... I would have thought, having gotten captured Brussels for nothing, we, number one company, went up to Le Vay Airfield. There was also an airfield at Eindhoven. I would have thought the Dakotas would have been better bringing up food, ammo, POW, petrol, mostly for the tank. But when we were in Nijmegen, we were on German rations.
Really?
Now, I think I told you this. In the morning, the quartermaster went to a Dutch RAC depot, and he got Dutch rations, which were revolting, but nevertheless there was something, black bread and porridge with garlic in it. And he was looking at the list, and he said, who else is using it? He said, oh, well, the Germans come in the afternoon. The Germans were going in the afternoon, and we were doing the... But you see, everything came from the Aramanches.
It still came from Normandy.
Yeah. The only people who they made any use of was evacuating, as far as I gather, were the wounded. But I would have thought it would be more use to bring up the necessary resupplies, even reinforcements. That's one thing. Secondly, I think I gave you the air plan for the typhoons for...
Oh, yes.
Well, now, if you look at that, the same day they were beating up barges on the Seine. It's a great pity that they didn't have more air support all along. But then the RAF refused to give air support at Nijmegen because of the pylons.
Oh, right.
And everything else.
Right, so it wasn't so much flak, it was more the...
They may have known what would... See those bloody... pictures I gave you.
Yes, yes.
But you see, there again, there's air photography. I was a forward air controller after the war, and the whole time in Germany, photos are taken, you give an in-flight report, it goes down to DIV, but the photographs, they never get to the people who really need them in time.
So the intelligence is...
Well, they'd say by the time they race them through, the general gets them, they're in an intro. But the people who want them, first of all, don't get them. B, they don't understand them.
No, it's...
I mean, if you show the average air photography to the average bloke, doesn't understand
it. No, of course not. It's the topography of it, it's all...
And, you know, they... If you read one of the... divisional reports who leaves us on the left, which division was that? 43. It says, could you ask the RAF to bomb the Germans tomorrow instead of us for a change? I mean, you know, friendly fires.
Right, so there's plenty of
them. Oh, plenty of them.
Were people using any marking devices?
Yes, we all had yellow things and pink things. I don't think anyone really realised. And then I suppose pilots, pretty young.
Of course.
I mean, inexperienced.
Of course.
But no, I think by and large they did us proud.
Right.
When we got them.
When you got them. Yes. I'm going to ask three final questions.
Yeah, I do, sure.
You talked about finding a German intelligence depot or a German intelligence...
Yes, this... Well, I'll get back on this. Is after the war. When I was doing all my research, I got a message from a woman in London, and she said, can you help me about a unit, German unit that was in Valkenswald? So I said, well, tell me what you want to know. And I got onto my contact. Sadly, he died 2 years ago. Yep. I said, yep. Was there a German unit, though? She says there was a German unit, equivalent to Bletchley, is it?
Bletchley, yes.
Yeah. He said, yes. I said, where was it? He said, I'll send you pictures of it. It was a huge farm. Now, they had this unit, was near Ostend or Zeebrugge, and then as the D-Day came, they moved them to this place. And he said they arrived one day, cleared the whole farm, and set up this thing where no one could go anywhere near it. And it's extraordinary, and I never knew anything about it until this woman said she had a job in the bunker, and she used to listen in to Churchill and Roosevelt, and if they were saying anything wrong, it had to be cut off immediately. But she told me this unit, and it's got a name, and I've got pictures of it somewhere, I'll let you have. It was doing what we were doing, and intercepting conversations between Roosevelt and Churchill, who was not always tactful about what he was saying.
No, no.
And it moved there until a few days before we went to Rotherhithe.
Really?
And then they buggered off into Germany somewhere.
Right, okay.
But then I said to her, the Ope was coming over to London, so I said, well, let's meet in London at RHQ, and he'll tell you what he knows about it. So we met, she arrived, and with her son at RHQ, and we took him to a little restaurant, Italian restaurant, and he told her all he knew. And she wanted to write a book about it.
Right.
Whether she ever did or not, I don't know.
I'll have to find out.
But she was keen to, but there was some reason why she didn't or wasn't. And anyhow, I think Yope sent me something on it. I'll dig it out for you.
Thank you, that'll be very interesting.
And it seems to me extraordinary that no one ever mentions it any time.
I'm totally unaware of it, Thomas.
But you see, in the same token, in France, I discovered when we were attacking in Sordeville, nearby, there was a German radar unit, which upped and away to the day after we captured that piece of land. And I got maps, and I know where it is, but no one knows what it was doing. What I suspect it was doing was locating raids.
Yes, I would imagine.
And at
yes.
the time of that time, there were a lot on VE things.
Yes.
But it upped and away. But I always remember that in our battle group, there was an RAF unit.
Oh, really?
And I wondered if they weren't involved in...
So not sort of regiment or anything like
no,
that?
No, for some extraordinary reason, there was an RAF unit. And I often wonder whether they didn't go and see what was there.
Right. Right.
But it was a small radar unit.
Interesting. I'll look into that as well. My penultimate question is about Joe. You talked about Joe, your CO.
Joe Mandeville, yeah.
What was he like?
He was a character. I mean, once... He was a character, and he was, to put it mildly, he was always in command, but not always in control. What you've got to realize, these fellows were company commander. He was adjutant just before the war. And then suddenly they get put in the position where they're fighting a most heavily trained, skilled army. And it's all very new to them. And it's a bit confusing. He was an eccentric in the best of times.
Right.
Quite old. He was older than he should have been, but he wasn't. Monty said nobody above a certain age, but as he was guardsman, second thing was there was a desperate lack of people who could command in the regiment. These regiments are very small. Coming back from North Africa, although there was some people in North Africa, they had a bloke who was Montagu Douglas Smith, who was a pre-war reservist. Then they came to us being suddenly turned from a training battalion into a regular. And to be honest, they just hadn't got the experience. And I don't think their idea of an armoured division was an infantry brigade, Armour Brigade, but they had no idea of a joint thing, which the Germans had. It was difficult for them.
So was it sort of learning on the job?
I think really it was, because nobody had anybody any experience. Those that had a bit were captured to Dunkirk. The battalion was routed out of Norway.
Right.
They then went to North Africa. People in North Africa fought a very different sort of war and learnt a lot but lost a lot. And we were suddenly trained in Yorkshire and put into Normandy. The Americans changed Devon and put into the right flank peninsula.
Right.
I mean, you'd think they could have even trained us in Devon.
Yes, would have made sense.
But it did an interesting, I think we're absolutely obsessed with security.
The Americans?
We are.
Oh, well, yes.
I asked a German not many long years ago, did you have censorship? He said, no, we had nothing like that. He said, and they all had cameras. Mm. He said, what's the point if I tell you I'd seen a British tank, my mother, a British tank? The hell's going to be interested in that? Mm. But our letters were read and reread and crossed out. And, of course, the blokes used to put terrible things to shock the young officers.
They were doing the censoring, yes. So Joe was...
He was good character.
Yes. And was he popular with them?
Yes, he was popular. I mean, he talked in like a comic in bubbles. Snaps. Bup, 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 bup. And, I mean, when he had, apart from a scout car, he had a Humber staff car.
Right.
And on the two loudspeakers, and inside he had a recording of classical music and the like, which he played whenever we were out on the line, resting. And he thought it was wonderful. It was blown up at Joe's Bridge, much to my relief. And he said how disappointed the troops were. But, you know, he was a good soul. I mean, he was kind to me. I went across to Normandy under field punishment.
Really?
Oh, yes, I was telling you. They didn't muck around those days. We were in billets in Eastbourne. And each day there was a billet orderly. So I happened to be that morning a billet orderly. And my platoon sergeant, we got an MM, he said, where's the key of the billet? To somebody in somebody's clown said, it's down the loo. And he said, Brady, go and get it out of the loo. And I got as far as saying, what? And he said, you're disobeying an order, fall in. And I had to get the bloody key out of the loo. But I was doubled down to the Irish battalion quarters. Get down there, marched in eventually, disobeying an order. You realise what a serious crime. And you want to be an officer. Oh, Mother of God. He said, I don't know what to do, it's a court-martial offence. But I'd already volunteered to go, not for an officer's test, Wasby. I'd failed the first one. I was due for a second one. I said, no, I want to go with the battalion. Anyhow, he said, well, he said, I'm going to let you off lightly. He said, yeah, 14 days field punishment. Well, in the old days, they'd tied you a bloody gun or something. And then Eastbourne, they put on big packs and you had to answer every call. You didn't get any money or anything. Feeling pay was stopped. It was really very grim. So they used to parade, and it was a bank holiday at Eastbourne. And we were parading with the defaulters who were there anyhow. Up, and they were going up and down the front and left turn, back turn, right turn. And a woman came up, said the drill song, Thackeray. I'm going to report you to the war office. He said, if you don't get on my parade, I'll put you in with them. Well, of course, that got me into trouble, because whenever we fit, I got the giggles. And whenever we turned around, left, turn, right, and we faced together, I used to, I couldn't help it. And that gave you an extra bloody hours drill. So I spent my life. Anyhow,
You were very good at drill by the end.
I wasn't any better, but I always was the last one off. Anyhow, we go up to Normandy, and then the RSM came up to me in the field the first day, and he said, CEO's been kind to you, he's going to let you off that. But it never went on my documents, so I was quite relieved. But I always remember that. And Grant, I called on him after we got an MM. He was a character. He had a water bottle full of rum, but he was a good sergeant.
I think because you mentioned to me, and it's my last question, you mentioned about Joe and the film and the sort of the film A Bridge Too Far. Yeah. And I think you've said that that he was quite a character during that. From
he is in Michael Caine.
Michael Caine talked very fondly about
him. He does, and he said to one flick, "I've got some photos for you. I think of him. I'd like to let you have." Caine said another week because Joe used to lecture him on how to behave as an officer.
Oh, yes. You heard a story about telling him how to put a cravat on.
That's right. And he said, another week with that bloody man, I'll be like a guards officer. I think I've got some food or something for you. I'll let you have them. There's no worries.
No. I mean, the film, I take it, you know, obviously you've seen the film.
It's almost, as Joe said to him, man producing, what's his bloody name?
Richard Attenborough.
Yeah, he said to Richard Attenborough, you know, it wasn't very much like this, you know. It wasn't really like this. And Attenborough said to him, Colonel Joe, you're not paying for it, the Americans. This is very well.
Yes, I think a number of people have said the same.
There was all sorts. And I had a, it's very dying now, a nice bloke from that division came into London and they asked me would I help, so I put him in the Victory Club and I looked after him, got him down the airport. And so on, I keep in touch with him, but I haven't recently. And he was in that lot, and I think they got on quite well together. But I mean, when you think of it, you look at the map, a bloody great German army in Antwerp, and
you've leapfrogged over them. But
we could have come back. I mean, it was obvious. I remember going back eventually to be commissioned. Going down that road, they were still been cutting that road months after.
Mm. Yes, I mean, the line, well, we only really captured that area.
We captured the road.
Right at the end. Did you ever, after the war, I mean, you had a long career after the war.
When?
Did you ever study it again? Was there any...
Yeah, I went back to, when I was in Germany, I was in always in an armoured division in Germany, and we'd gone all back to what we'd... how we started before we went to, you know, new or same old mistakes, and it used to be heartbreaking. However, we used to train down in Bergleerpolde, Belgium, training. And when I was down there, I took a couple of times to look at Joe's Bridge. And I followed it, but I didn't realize when I left, there was a game. We lost a whole battalion in February. Just before we went across the Rhine, taking a pointless attack, lost two companies there. Went in the Reichswald Forest Cemetery. Yes. That's a hell of a lot of Irish guards.
Really?
I couldn't think why. I was stationed at Gok.
Right.
Down the road for 2 years with the RAF as liaison officer. Couldn't think how they got there. And at that time I was busy with the children coming up, but... I've gathered quite a lot about it as well. I'm still going on and working.
Of course, you are. You're working on that. I mean, do you think, because we look at this operation, we look at Market Garden so much, there were a lot of other operations in the war.
Well, I think, you know, this is the trouble. I'm going over next June. I got an invitation because I made a freeman of the St. Charles de Percy from the mayor. Would I come over? And I'll go on the 6th of June, I'll go to the cemeteries where our friends are, lay a wreath, and spend the day with them and come back. But on these, all these celebrations, and the last one last year, they're all for D-Day. And afterwards, some of those divisions, 51st Highland, and those divisions in the Hill 112, slaughtered, it was like the Great War. And it's got... I think there's two reasons. The PR, there's no story in it, as there is in D-Day. Mm-hmm. And there's no story. I mean, let's face it, my brother was at Anglia Television, and they did very good documentaries. And I remember when I was in Berlin, and they came, Blake was doing it, came to stay with us, and they had to go to East Germany to get the best archive material. Anyhow, halfway through it, the angler said to the people, do you really want this to go on filming, this an absolute cock-up. The general's hiding in a cupboard, and everything's going wrong. Do you really want to? And they said, yes. But you see...
So there was no real interest then, and they didn't think that was a story. They just thought, because it was a defeat.
Defeat, but you see, we have a great knack.
We do.
Absolute knack. And it's a great pity because Goodwood was an absolute cock-up.
I might come back, if I may, and talk to you about Normandy. The college might well go to Normandy next year instead of going back.
Well, I wish they would. You know, again, it is extraordinary. I say this to you. There was a battalion suddenly cooked up in the war from the training battalion and the third battalion. I've given you a list of the casualties. At the end of the war, they couldn't get rid of it quick enough. And I feel, and I'm going to talk to them about it, I make no bones about it, there was a battalion, we should have been given colours.
Yes.
Our battle honours are put on the first battalion.
Yes.
And I feel, like many of us, that it was rather pity. Even if there wasn't a battalion, we should have had colours in memory of the dead.
Of course.
But they didn't. And I do think it's a pity, because a lot of the men after the war felt, well, there were a lot of national servicemen and what have you, thought, well, no, no, they're all going back now to be on the guard in Buckingham Palace and all that. And the tail wagging the dog. And I say this sincerely, and I'll say it to anyone, but I'm going over on June, and I shall go down to Cadbury, because I'm great friends there. Have I given you the tape of Cadbury from last year?
No,
I'll give it to you. They made a very good amateur tape. But Blue Coat, and there's...
Which is what they want. They want to do Blue Coat, Goodwood and Epsom.
Epsom, Blue Coat. And I tell you who's doing it again this year. I went there with... He put you on to me, David Hannay. He's Oxford University.
No.
You must meet him. I mean, get you two together.
He's very
academic. I mean, he's a great man for detail. And he runs the most superb battlefield tour. He did Epsom, and I haven't done it before. He took me out, and I stay with him, and I do Goodwood, and he didn't do Blue Coat. You may do it this year. You want to contact him.
Oh, definitely.
Your boss, Peter, got in touch with him at...
That's how he did it, right?
Yeah. And he's terribly helpful in case into enormous detail.
Right.
He's going to leave there, and he's going to Brussels as a job.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah. I like him, because I'm godfather to his little girl. His father was in the diplomat consular service in Africa. But get in touch with him. But if they do go to Normandy, you see, we've always done Bridge Too Far from Germany because it was easy to get the battalion from Munster down.
Of course.
And of course it is expensive to go over to Normandy.
Well, it is from Germany.
And it is from England, but I mean, it's a great pity. One thing I'm going to try and talk to the general about, Sebastian, is that we have the AOCN, Birmingham, Liverpool, Dublin, and London. I think it'd be nice if they adopted a graveyard.
Oh, yes.
And then, over a period of time, make a point of going to a different cemetery. Yes.
Well, the Dutch, of course, I mean...
They're wonderful.
The manner in which they treat the ceremony as the cemetery up at Arden, yeah. The main one.
They're wonderful. What I did... In the 50th anniversary, they were wondering what to give to the French, Dutch and Belgians. And what I devised was a colour, and it's the same as you see the old comrades have. And we found a firm near Tower Bridge that made them. And it's tricking at me.
It's about to stop.
Well,
I just want to make sure it's not running over there.
You all right?
In fact, it has stopped. That's
fine.
Anyhow, that's still on, so that's...
So we found this firm, and I had made one which had St. Charles de Personnes, Malmvidier, and the Normandy thing.
Right.
And we presented to them, instead of a cup or something, they love it. Mm. Now, every time on the 6th of June, there's one man who carries it, gave one to Jay's Bridge area, for the Belgians, and one in Volkenswald. If you ever go there, they have it in the town hall.
Those in the town hall.
It didn't cost that much, but they love it, you see.
I must have a look next time I go.
Oh, it's a pretty upstate, because he was enormous help. But they're planning a trip to Bridge Too Far in... RHQ wanted to do it in September this coming year, but I rang up the other day because it's pro forma there. And they said they haven't got enough people to do it.
Well, that's a shame.
It is a pity, but I shall see how it goes.
Oh, that's normally it's a case of not having too much money, but if they...
Well, it's always the same. It's not cheap, but then... And no veterans left.
No, it's...
But it's easy when they're in Germany, because you can get the young soldiers. They love it.
Well, I did it last year from Rheindalen.
Yeah.
And that went very well.
They love it.
And
I can, and the advantage of being a soldier, I can take the piss out of the officer.
Of course, absolutely.
I love that.
Yes.
And when I tell them, it gave me great joy to see Ice Cube burning. But there you are.
Completely different question, but it was just one very quickly, because thinking, so you were 21 when you crossed the Seine.
Yeah, it was my birthday. I always remember it well, because we harboured up in a big wood. Everyone gave me a bit extra of their rations. Mother sent me a copy of the Catholic Herald, which she thought was good.
Overwatch for your birthday?
It arrived. And I got, funny enough, and I'll show you a copy, the only letter I ever had from my father in my life. On that day, saying, wishing me luck and saying, I hope you get your wish to liberate Paris, which I thought we might do.
Right.
But in fact, a few days later, we liberated Brussels.
Brussels, you went left instead of right.
Yeah, well, the Yanks were busy. I kept that letter, because he didn't write very much. That was nice.
So you were 21 then, so, because I'm writing a book as well on 1940. So you'd have been a very sort of 17-year-old.
Well, I was talking to my brother last night. He went to Dunkirk with the Irish Fusiliers as an officer and came out on foot to Cherbourg.
Gosh, walked all the way out to there.
Got pinched trucks with his platoon. And it's quite interesting. He said they'd locked the wells in a lot of the villages and the women were saying, you are deserting us. Your fathers didn't do it. The men were drinking cider, so they were dropping out. And he said the worst thing he ever had to do was to put a man on a set, OP on the road, see if the Germans were coming, and he never got away. But eventually he got to Cherbourg and got on a boat, and luckily it wasn't the one that was torpedoed.
Like Castria.
He got arrived at Weymouth or something. And the thing that shook him was how really treated them as heroes. And they were so sort of ashamed of themselves. The other thing was, there was an officer, a colonel, who was trundling along the reservist, who said, you look after my bedroll, will you, Brady? And he said, no. And when he got there, he was furious because Pat hadn't brought his bedroll. You know, they lived, half of them were not living in another world.
These were regular officers.
Regular officers. But, I was talking to yesterday, the day before, because we always, he's 92. And I was saying, I remember, 16, going on a train home. It was in the holidays, electric train from Southport to where we lived. Looking at the paper, and the whole of the paper was arrows of where the Germans were. I think,
nobody worried. I'm writing about the summer of 1940, the threat of invasion.
I was a cram in Camberley,
right?
And we're all taking our school certificate, and just towards it was in July, and most of them knew us. We knew some would pass, some wouldn't. And those that wouldn't said, "Well, I'm going to join the Young Soldiers Battalion," and I'll be safe when the results come. And there was a fellow from Ireland Norman, something, I can't remember his name. And he said, it was a Saturday after we'd done the result, he said, I'm going to Reading to join the RAF. So he said, you come for the day, with a trip. It was from Bagshot, a little village.
I know, I used to work out there.
Up to Reading. So I said, yeah, I'll come with you, I've nothing else to do. So I came with him and went to Reading. We walked out of Reading Station up a hill to a big house. Went in there, and he was filling in forms. And he said, why don't you join the RAF? He said, I can't join the RAF. I said, I'm only 16. He said, come on, give you a fudge your age and come with me. Lee Norman, that's his name, a good family of a man. So I said, oh, my God. So I did. So, the signs of the swing, we went back. And the next thing was, I went home on leave, finished the grammar, knew I wouldn't do very well, I passed in English and religion. Got a thing to report to Cardington, Bedfordshire. So I went back to Reading, I had to walk back to Reading, that's right, I went back, told my father was on some apprentice scheme for the RAF. But this was for aircrew. And when I get there, there's two brothers from Uppingham, myself, and another odd bloke. They were given warrants to go to Cardington. Get to Cardington, it was a Zeppelin depot or something, RO1. And we're treated like royalty. There's only us, and we go in front of some old codgers, test us and ask us what we did and where we went to school. That's wonderful. Just what we want for our crew. And this was getting a bit worrying. The worst part of that was blowing the thing up. I can see it to this day. You had to blow it, you had to blow it. Past physical, past everything. Then we're all wheeled in. Aircrew, pilot officer. Now, when can you start? Oh, bloody hell, I don't know which way to look. And Lee Norman hadn't turned up.
So he had you turn up and he didn't.
So I said, well, I can't come immediately. I've got to go home and do one or two things. Because they all were sent down to Torquay as I went to them.
Right. Do their training down there?
Yeah. So I'm in the wash place that following morning, shaving with a razor without a blade in, and I get a tap on the shoulder. And there's this flight sergeant. He says, how old are you, laddie? Oh, says I, I'm 18. He said, I'll ask you again. So I said, I'm 18. He said, you know, in the Queen's regulations, if you're caught false enlistment, you can either go to prison. He said, I'll ask you once. How old are you? I said, I'm 16. So I was wheeled in front of the station commander, and he said, well, this is a serious mission, so I'm caught not again. He said, well, do you want to join the RAF? I said, yes, I would have joined the bloody fire engine. He said, well, if you come back when you're 18, I'll let you out, off. So I said, well, I'll give you my word. I remember going up to London on the train and spending the night in one of those funny hotels and getting on the train going home. But I kept my word and I joined up in 18.
So you reported back and joined the RAF?
When I was 18. And I went to St. John's Wood. That place was teeming with aircrew would-be. But don't you kid yourself, in 1940 there were people falling over each other.
Right.
It wasn't until the Battle of Britain.
Right.
That it happened.
Right.
And then, coming by thousands, and then what happened to me? I went to St. John's Wood. How the hell I was going to get out of it? I finished up in Rhodesia in 1942.
Oh, Empire Air Training Plan.
Yeah, I finished up in Rhodesia in 1942. And I didn't know what the hell to do. Every time we did I was hopeless at maths, every time we did a navigation test, I finished up in the wrong country or the wrong. I couldn't stand height, it would have fallen off a bloody ladder. And so, in the end, I cocked it up, and those that had failed, they were all marched in front of the boss in Bulawayo, and they said to me, you failed, what do you want to do? Well, I said, I was ignorant that if you'd failed as aircrew, you could be discharged, but he said in Rhodesia they couldn't. I said, well, I would like to go up to the desert. My brother's just been taken, one of my brothers You ready?
I'm about to drink, Bill.
Oh, my goodness, yes. All the time. Yeah.
Would you like a glass of sherry or something?
Oh, no, I better not. No. I'm driving, better unfortunately. Not.
No, we'll have lunch whenever you're ready.
Okay.
And just let me bore him for five minutes more.
No, but by all means, to fit in, yes.
And, okay?
Yes.
And so, I volunteered to go up to the desert.
So this is going to push you to North
Africa? Yeah, wanted to go
so
there.
So this is before Al Alamein, is it? Or is it after
It was
Alamein,
just
or?
After, what?
Is it before Al Alamein, or
was yeah, it was, yes. Right. You tell me when it was. It was after Al Alamein, I think, because my brother was taken prisoner, the one that I'm talking about, in Tobruk.
And yes, June 1942.
Yeah, and he was CO's driver of the Rifle Brigade.
Oh, right.
He was quite old. And they were... A bloke said to me in the RAF, sitting comfortably in Rhodesia, what do you want to go up for? The army up there all running away. And I said, my brother's run away, he's a prisoner of war, and this Lynette sends me. I said, I want to go there, I want to join the army, I don't want to hang around with the Air Force. Now, I'll go in your armoured car regiment. I would have bloody deserted rather than stay in the army. I was the only one sent back to England, and all the rest were sent up to the desert.
So
then I was sent down to Cape Town in November 42. I got on a ship with the commando coming back from Madagascar on our own. We sailed on our own and we ran into the fleet invading, American fleet invading North Africa. So
a torch, yes, I torch.
And they stopped us and went all around us. We belted off then to Belfast, air raid, went to Blackpool, demobbed, walked across the road, joined the Irish Guard. That's how it came to me.
My goodness.
And wasted a year. I didn't, because I was very immature, really, I suppose. And all the people, I mean, my best friends lying in the cemetery, St. Charles Percy, Kevin McGuire, brought up together in the prams. Pod Burke, he was killed in Sorderville, prefect at Hodder, the prep school for Stonehurst. So I was lucky. So I can't complain. So that's really...
I didn't realise you'd been in the RAF.
Oh, I had. And
so, as you said, perfect navigator.
The only thing I was good at was Morse. And one day a bloke, who later became a pal, he said, I can't do Morse. So I said, I've nothing to do, I'll go in and do it for you.
tap, tap, dot, dot, dash, dash, yeah.
I couldn't do it today.
No, I wouldn't know.
I brought you some books to show you afterwards.
Thank you for all that, that was fantastic. No, no. Would you mind if I was to come back another time and
talk
about
I'd like to give you more time.
No, that would be... that was so interesting. That was so interesting.
I'd love to stop for you, yet.
Put that there.
To my point of view, it's wonderful to be able to talk to somebody who's interested.
Oh, well, there'd be a lot of people interested, I can assure you. It's just
so difficult because there's a generation gone.
Do you think that the younger generation isn't interested?
They are, but they're not able to get at it.